This is the Deliberate Talks weekly podcast, powered by the Pixelated Egg Digital Ventures. Tune in every week to learn something new about digital marketing and entrepreneurship. And now, over to the voice of your host, Dakshin Adyantaya. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome back to a new episode on the Season 3 of the Deliberate Talks podcast. And reporting, the keyword for today is wordplay. From the studios with me, Dakshin Adyantaya, is Arvind Agrawal. Hello, Arvind. How are you doing, sir?
Very well. Thank you. How are you doing, Dakshin?
Doing great. Thank you so much. Arvind is a founder and CEO of AICL Communications Limited. He is India's most experienced and profiled practitioner of corporate reporting. He's also a trusted advisor to corporate leaders of India's large and emerging companies on investor communication, sustainability reporting, integrated reporting, and ESG communications. And that, my friend, is how you define credibility. But before that, Arvind, you know, before the successful journey of yours, what was your average day like and what did you do before AICL?
Yeah, it's a long time back, so I'll have to think. But I think my average day before AICL used to be that of an accountant. So I used to sort of have to change about four modes of transport to get to office. So I used to walk to the bus stop, take a bus to point A. From point A to point B, I used to take a rickshaw, an auto rickshaw. Then that would be the riverbank. And from the riverbank, I had to take a steamer to the other side of the river in Calcutta. And once you are on the side of the river, you had to take another auto rickshaw or toto, as they call it, in that part of the world, and get to the factory where I used to work as an accountant. That was the exciting part. After that, everything was boring. By the time I got to the office, all I had to do was check numbers, write reports, talk to the bankers, and make stock statements and match trial balances and write out board resolutions and things like that. That's how my average day used to look in the first part, but it got more interesting when I got back home, because that gave me an opportunity to read, to understand a few more things, and to probably indulge in some music. But I was a very studious kind of guy. I didn't have a girlfriend or anything. So yeah, my life was pretty straightforward and linear.
Okay. And how did this idea of AICL come into the picture? Like, what was that moment that you decided that I'm done with accounting and this is where I need to lead to?
So in a way, this is an extension of accounting. I always wanted to be in the creative field, whether that's advertising or the arts, but being from the background that I am, all of that was the perfect recipe for you being disowned by the family. And I really needed a home to go back to. So yes, I had to do a chartered accountancy course and become a company secretary also, because that was also a ticket to marriage. You know, without that, no Marwari father would hand over a girl to you. So yeah, I mean, those were very important life considerations that drove what I studied. And as a natural consequence, obviously, you ended up becoming an accountant. But my father is a very avid stock market trader. So we used to get a lot of annual reports at home. And when I started reading those annual reports, somehow sort of they fascinated me, sometimes for the lack of effort and sometimes for the absolute brilliance of effort. And I kind of started to see a pattern between what made a good company vis-a-vis what did not make a good company. And somewhere the answer lay in the annual report. So I kind of thought that, is it possible for us to be, or me to be, a specialized reporting consultant with no knowledge whatsoever, of course. I mean, I'm very good at sort of fibbing and sort of hustling my way through. But the idea was, can I merge the understanding of accounting and business with the yearning for creativity and create a service in India for which there was a clear demand, because a lot of Indian companies were undervalued, not because they were underperforming, but because they were under communicating. And there was no supply, because, you know, advertising agencies and PR firms were more focused on selling products and not necessarily selling the company as a whole. And these were the days when CNBC had just started in India. So I used to see managements come on TV and talk about quarterly performance. But none of the stuff they spoke about found mention in the annual report. So I thought, why not bring that knowledge and insight into a document and That's how the idea stuck. And then we sort of looked at people who could join in, got lucky in finding a client or two, and then there was no looking back.
Wow, fantastic journey there. And, you know, now I just want to get more into detail about what this is, because reporting is a very simple term to understand, but what goes behind it is a very complex process. Now, we did mention about ESG communication, right? Now, for someone who doesn't understand or refer to the term ESG in their normal conversations, or listeners who have never heard about this term before, what does it stand for and why is it so important for companies today?
Great question, because I think if any professional scans their LinkedIn profile, 8 out of 10 posts will have the word ESG. Mm-hmm. If you scan the newspapers, then almost on every page, you're going to find an article related to ESG investing. Mm-hmm. If you hear management talk, or if you study any of the investor presentations, you are going to see the word ESG.
Right.
And so obviously it has really, really exploded in the past 2 years. And that's an ironic simile because, ESG is about anything but explosions. You know, it is about safety. It is about environment. It is about social. It's about governance. And why it is so important for companies is very simply because it is so important for citizens and people in the world. You look around you, who are the most famous people in the world today known for doing good? It is people like Greta Thunberg or Malala Yousafzai or, some of these activists. Now, you may or may not agree with their position, and I'm not going to get into that.
Right.
But the point is that the whole argument around climate change, recycled product, responsible living, minimalism, being less and less consumeristic in your approach is a real thing. Younger people don't want 5 pieces of tissue with their Starbucks coffee. They are perfectly happy to sort of, you know, go to a grocery store with a refillable bottle and get their detergent in it rather than getting a new plastic bottle every time they need some soap, you know.
Right.
So I think the importance of ESG is stemming from where we are as a planet and the real and dire need to sort of reduce global warming and bring down the average increase of temperature in order that future generations also have a planet to live on, to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels such as coal and oil, to ensure that, you know, the waste we generate in some senses comes back into the operating environment rather than being dumped in the land, to see that people get equal opportunity and that there is no discrimination, so human rights and safety at work are respected, and to see that companies are being governed very, very well and in the right manner, that the management and the board are not siphoning away money or not taking away the rights of any stakeholder. So essentially, it comes from these very common sense approaches to what modern life looks like. And therefore, the acronym ESG effectively stands for environment, which includes things like, what are you doing to mitigate climate change? What are you doing to ensure that you're not polluting the rivers by dumping dirty water? What are you doing to ensure that, you know, your emissions are not polluting the atmosphere, and that the waste that you're generating as a company is in some sense either not toxic or you're figuring out a way of recycling it? Similarly, on social, you're ensuring that you're doing whatever you can for the community. You're taking care of your employees. You are ensuring that the products you're putting out are not in any way harmful for consumers. And if they are, then you're making full disclosure, and that you're treating your suppliers and, you know, other members of the supply chain well. Mm-hmm. And in terms of governance, it's essentially about making sure that, you know, you have all the right policies in place. You're governing the company as a trustee of the shareholders' money, and that you're taking all effective steps to ensure that the board or the management is not garnering a large part of the profits for themselves. So that, in a nutshell, is what ESG is looking at. And
right.
It's pretty self-explanatory why it's important for companies, because if you don't have these things, then you will not survive very long as an organization. So therefore,
right.
Sustainability or ESG or whatever name you want to give it is essentially about ensuring that companies remain in business for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And we need to move from what we call quarter-on-quarter thinking to to decade on decade thinking.
Right, right. And just emphasizing again on that aspect, you know, when you're drafting a communication for ESG, or even, you know, talking about reporting from a company perspective, how much of importance is given individually, you know, like environment, social, or governance? Do you think it's equal weightage and importance for all these three terms, or it's specifically leaning towards more of environment than the other two?
So it effectively is a function of what business you are in. It's not a linear answer, and it's not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're a company that's manufacturing highly natural resource intensive products, let's say if you're making steel or if you're making cement, so you're using a lot of limestone and you're using a lot of iron ore and you're using a lot of coal, your process leads to an extremely high amount of material being moved from point A to point B. Your production process generates a lot of heat, a lot of energy, a lot of water, and a lot of effluent. And your products are very, very difficult to sort of just move around. In that case, yes, environment and environment-related considerations are going to be important. But if you are a bank or if you are a telecom company, then what is more important is, let's say, how are you encouraging more and more people to save in the right manner? How are you safeguarding your customers against cyber fraud? Or let's say, how are you encouraging them to reduce their screen time and not become addicted to entertainment content and sort of ignore their health in the process? In such cases, social becomes more important. And if you're part of industries where there is a lot of opaqueness, where there is no clarity, there is not too much of transparency, like let's say construction or contracting, then governance becomes very, very important. So this really is a function of what industry you are in, what stage of life your company is in, how mature you are, who are your shareholders, how much shares are with the public, how many countries you operate in, who your customers are, and basis that you define what is more or less important. And what you've essentially asked is what we in technical terminology call materiality. So for every company, the material issues might differ depending upon why they are where they are. So yeah, it's not a straight answer, but that's how it is.
Right, right. And, you know, are companies following these norms of sustainability? And do you see a significant difference in the way Indian companies perform against the standards of global companies?
So yes, I mean, companies are, the large companies are definitely doing it. The medium and small companies need to sort of do a little more. But having said that, I would say that firstly, these are not norms. These are best practices.
Right.
Which essentially decide whether or not an investor will put money in your organization, follows from the question of whether or not a businessman wants that money or not.
Right.
Secondly, I think there is a lot of the world preaching to India that's happening, which is unfair because, frankly, I think Indian companies do a lot more. Sometimes they don't know how to talk about it, but they're actually doing a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And thirdly, many of this is not new stuff. It is just being packaged under the umbrella of ESG.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are laws in every state and there are pollution control boards which define, you know, what kind of pollutants are permitted, what is not permitted. And you have to submit a report to the authorities on a very regular basis. Similarly, there is a labor commissioner and there is, you know, the Ministry of Social Welfare that looks at how companies are treating their people. And there are regulatory watchdogs like SEBI and the Ministry of Company Affairs that are already governing how a company is being run. So it's not like these are new things and it's not like these are things that are strange or sort of, you know, first time concepts for Indian companies. They have been followed. It's just that they perhaps have not been presented together with a particular view of highlighting what is it that is really happening. Indian companies are doing very, very well, but I think the smaller and medium sized companies can perhaps do a little better. That said, this is not just about actions that a company can take without any financial implications. More often than not, your ability to reduce your emissions your ability to do a lot of things comes at a huge cost because you have to change your plant design. You have to buy new technology. And if your customer is not willing to pay for the additional cost, then you cannot destroy the business at the cost of saving the environment. So it's also a decision that is based on economic parameters and how the industry itself is doing. And lastly, I would say that, yes, there is scope for Indian companies to sort of do more, but it's not like they are in any way behind the global norms.
Right.
What we really are moving towards is a goalpost approach. Because right now you're doing everything and communicating what's happening today, but you're not defining what is the end game and where you would like to go. So the one big area in which I see the narrative shifting is where companies are going to have to define targets, meaning this is where we are today. This is where we want to be in 2030. Mm-hmm. And this is the roadmap of how we will get there. That process, I believe, is beginning to happen. And that will lead to a lot more discussion around these issues and a lot more reflection within companies.
And you know, because with so many years of experience and you've seen the practices evolve over time, and you've already commented about how things are not different much from an Indian perspective to a global perspective. But I want to understand from your insights and your experience, have you seen an evolving practice come into picture when it comes to, you know, the ESG and communication around it?
You mean an evolving professional practice?
Yes.
Oh, of course. Of course. I think it's very clear that, you know, the evolving practice began to appear when sustainability became a big thing. And that's something that started happening towards the end of the last century and mid, and in I think 2003, 2004.
Right.
So you find that a lot of management colleges started offering specialized programs on sustainability, on environment management, and so on and so forth. So I think the momentum was being built up over the last decade and a half. But for the last 2 years, it's really picked up. So yes, ESG is a very, very important and attractive practice that is evolving. But I think with everything that's evolving and everything that's flavor of day, there is also a bit of gimmickiness that comes into the picture. So you will find a lot of people just changing their LinkedIn bios and adding the word ESG in it if they have been remotely concerned with one aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to my mind, not the right way of doing it, because it then sort of reduces the whole thing to a bit of a sham. It does require some specialized understanding. It does require a certain degree of technical as well as functional knowledge. It requires a certain worldview and awareness about the issues that comprise ESG. And I think over time, it's going to happen. It's pretty much the same way as you know, digital marketing or coding or software writing, which used to be fads, let's say 15, 20 years ago. But over time, they have normalized and more specialized courses as well as clearly defined roles and clearly defined specializations have come in. And I see the same happening with ESG in the time to come.
Right. And AICL, how does it come into the picture to help these corporates, if you could back it up with interesting client stories? And how does it integrate this whole thing for a corporate, for a big or a small organization?
I mean, if I were to give you a very easy to understand answer, mm-hmm. I would say that we are the equivalent of a beauty parlor, you know, where mm-hmm. people come in and we do everything from eyebrows to facials to waxing, and depending upon who wants what, we do it. But sort of that apart, and if I were to give you a little more serious perspective, the first thing that we do is that we are very good at scanning the environment and defining what is the exact need and what's the problem and what can be the possible solutions for it. The second thing that we do is that we engage with the various departments within an organization and sometimes with their external stakeholders to define what are the issues that are most critical to them and the outside world and what kind of responses would they like.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing is, of course, that we have functional expertise such as you know, content gathering and research, writing, editing and copywriting, graphic design and illustrations, production and artwork, digital, film production, social media, and so on and so forth. So that whatever solutions we are recommending, we have the capability to sort of bring it all together and produce, you know, a tangible outcome. So that's where we come into the picture as people who do it for many organizations. So therefore, they have perspective, and we've sort of brought this perspective to some of India's largest companies. If I started talking about client stories, it would probably need another 3 episodes of your podcast. But it's just, you know, I think it's convenient enough to say that pretty much every large brand in the country that you can think of is our client. And we're fortunate to sort of have that. We've worked on, let's say, completely transforming the image of, you know, one of India's largest companies from an oil and gas major to a consumer industry and telecom and digitalization driven organization. We've worked on 2 of India's largest steel companies to help them establish how they are A, very efficient steel manufacturers, and B, how they are really doing very well on the environmental aspects. We work with India's largest private bank to sort of, you know, bring 5 of their reports into one document, which basically puts all their information front and center for readers to understand and analyze, which is a marked departure from what they used to do for the first 25 years of their existence. We are working with some very, very new age companies. Like there is a hotel startup that's very, very famous, whose sort of performance blogs we are working on. And there are quite a few other technology-driven organizations that we work on. We've helped India's 2nd largest IT company come up with what their targets should be for the next 10 years in terms of ESG. And we are working with some very large media firms to establish how, you know, their strategy is going to play out in the future and how they're going to move from an essentially analog brand to a fully digital brand. So those are some of the stories that sort of validate what we've done and give you proof. I'm deliberately not taking names, but essentially we work across sectors, and there's a huge body of work which now is in a sense propelling itself, because clients do want what the other guys like. How you go to a restaurant and you like what somebody else is eating, mm-hmm. You're practically living off that desire of people, you know. So most of our clients come and say, I'll have what he's having, and we're happy to serve.
Right, fantastic. And you know, this really needs a good team, or you know, experts coming into the picture to draft that right kind of support for companies, right? So when it comes to, say, hiring or getting the right team or people, mm-hmm. experts into it, what's the kind of skill sets required for an individual, one? And 2nd thing is, what's the state of talent acquisition right now?
It's a good question, because it's something that I am myself struggling to answer. Like it is with all niche businesses, obviously talent acquisition is perhaps the most difficult thing that you will do in life. And
right. And
I don't know whether it's a happy problem to have, but our growth is only constrained by our ability to sort of, you know, increase the team size, because I'm really not worried about the demand, because mm-hmm. we know that the potential of our business is so big that we could be double or triple the size if we had double or triple the number of people. That being said, I think the skills we are looking for at a philosophical level are people who are risk takers, who really want to do something differentiated in life and who want to create impact. Because in our business, the 2 big things that happen is, number one, you get access to pretty much every large organization in the country, and you get to sit with their board and management and learn things that most people cannot even dream of learning. So that exposure is really, really immense. And finally, the outcome of what we do does change the fortune of the company in many, many ways. And especially in the last 2 years, we've seen many of our clients re-rated and revalued, in as much as, you know, some of the market capitalizations have gone up by anywhere between 300 times. And that's the kind of impact that our work creates. So people get a chance to participate in that impact. And so a fire to do that is very important. A desire to take that risk is very important. And most importantly, the willingness to work hard, because whatever we do, large clients are very demanding, and much of this work is deadline driven. So it does get a little hot under the collar sometimes.
Right.
I think at a skill level, we look for people with a reasonable understanding of business, with above average communication skills, both in terms of verbal and written communication. And for different departments, we look for excellence in that particular category. So we're looking for somebody who's very, very good with coding. We're looking for somebody who's very, very good with UI design. We're looking for somebody who's absolutely great at visual concept. We're looking for somebody who understands typography extremely well. We're looking for proofreaders who have a great eye for detail. We're looking for copywriters who can write non-gimmicky, non-advertising, long copy. We're looking for researchers who know how to get to the nub of the business and ask the right questions, and so on and so forth. So at a functional level, we require diverse skills, and they really can come from anywhere or any other industry. But really what we look for invariably among people is fire, is a passion to do something different, a love for communication, and an ability to understand that businesses are the best thing for the world, and that it's businesses that are really keeping things alive. So we generally don't hire the activist types, who think that business is evil. So I think a respect for business is a very important part of who we hire.
All right. Okay. And with that, Arvind, we end the first round of conversations and moving on to a quick round of questions. This is the rapid fire round of questions. Starts in three. Ready for this?
Yep.
Okay. What's the best way to stay updated with ESG practices and content according to you?
Follow the right hashtags on LinkedIn.
Okay. While you're one of them, who are the other three individuals globally to look up to when it comes to content around ESG?
So I wouldn't say individuals, but I would say that there is a consultancy called ERM that does reasonably good work. There is a gentleman by the name of Richard Howitt who puts out some great content. There are a few other agencies. I'm not recalling the names immediately, but I'll get back to you with that.
Okay, super. Teach us three important words with respect to ESG.
Originality. Authenticity. And proof.
Okay. There's an interesting read on greenwashing, or taking steps to make your activities appear more sustainable than they actually are. For many ESG investors are concerned that the investments are not for what they claim to be. What are your thoughts on this, and how can one deal better with this?
That's practically the case with every form of communication. When you read an ad, it says the car is going to give you X number of miles per liter, but then it writes under test conditions and things like that. So I think a bit of obfuscation and a bit of overstatement is the world we are living in today. And I really wouldn't worry too much about it, because at the end of the day, businesses get evaluated for the products they produce, the quality of the products they produce, the price at which they sell, and the people who use those products. If the product is not good, none of this matters. And as long as the company is making a good product, it cannot do so by having the wrong processes around its business. So while it may be true in some cases, I just think that it will sort itself out with more and more people looking at it and demanding some answers. So it's a question of putting the subject under scrutiny, and it's going to sort itself out.
Okay. When someone tells you investors talk about ESG but don't invest in it, your answer to them normally is?
Of course they invest in it. Whole world is today, every investment today is an ESG investment.
Okay. And as the largest design studio in the B2B space, what is it that you look forward to evolving into the next steps?
So we definitely want to increase our consultancy quotient, meaning that we want to work more and more on helping companies define the next 10 years of their existence rather than just analyzing the past year. So a lot of our work in reporting is actually backward looking, meaning that we are reviewing the year gone by. We'd like to turn the lens a little and be more forward looking in our work. So that's one evolution. The second evolution, I think from a delivery standpoint, we will be doing a lot more non-print work. I don't use the word digital because, again, I think it's one of those things that have become a gimmick, but we are going to use more diverse mediums of delivery, whether it is posters in the office, videos, websites, and stuff on social media. So I think the number of mediums that we work on will expand quite a bit. third thing that I see evolving is that India will become a hub of this knowledge and this service delivery. So obviously, we will look at more and more global clients. And lastly, I think that we will see a flood of talent towards this particular role and industry, because coupled with the exposure, it now gives people a chance to be part of what is legitimately the hottest party in town. You know, for the longest time, reporting wasn't sexy. I think what ESG has done is it's made it very sexy. So I think that really means a lot of things for the way our team is going to be shaping up.
Right. Fantastic. And finally, before we sum up our conversation, in 3 to 4 pointers, how should one, not just big companies, but also small startups, incorporate the best practices to reporting?
So I would say the first thing to do is to have a clear purpose. You know, you have to define what is it that you stand for, what your strategy is, and what do you want the world to know about you? So that's point number one. Point number two is honesty and transparency. You know, if something is not good, say it as it is, it's not going to be a problem because nobody expects companies and people to be perfect. Number three is that try and create a unique statement for yourself in terms of your visual and verbal tone, right? Figure out a way of distinguishing yourself, because everybody uses the same set of imagery when it comes to partnerships or green manufacturing and things like that. It doesn't have to be like that. So I think it ties back to authenticity, but having a signature visual and verbal tone is very, very important. Number four is consistency. You know, do this whether your performance has been good or bad, and do it in a way that, you know, people see you as a credible organization and not somebody who is, you know, here to sort of, you know, feather their own nest when the going is good.
Great. Fantastic, Arvind. And with that, we come to the end of this episode. Thank you so much for making time for this conversation. And before we go, where can our listeners follow you or connect with you?
So my LinkedIn is by my name, Arvind Agrawal, A-R-V-I-N-D-A-G-R-A-W-A-L. And on Twitter, I go by Arvind Agrawal. And on Instagram, I think I'm Annual Reporter, though I'm not very good with social media.
Great. I had a great time hosting you. Thank you so much. Hope you enjoyed your time on the show as well.
I did. Thank you.
Super. Best wishes always. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So that brings us to the close of today's conversation. And before we wrap up, here is an interesting fact for the day. According to a study from KPMG, 71% of CEOs believe that it's a personal responsibility to ensure that the organization's ESG policies reflect the values of their customer. What are your thoughts on this? That's it for today. This is Dakshin Adyantaya signing off. Don't forget to hit the follow button on your favorite audio platforms or get in touch with me at deliberatetalks@gmail.com. Join in next Monday for a new episode. Until then, inspire and be inspired.